Oh, we're getting a thumbs up. Two thumbs up.
All right, then I guess we can begin. We were already talking. I thought we were already recording.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Because we were talking about Thomas Massie.
Who is
R.I.P.
R.I.P.
No, we...
We shall not see his light again.
He was one of our people.
He was.
And it's always tough to lose. We're down to now basically no one except Rand Paul, kind of. And it's not great.
Rand Paul is the last kind of unreconstructed Tea Party Republican.
Yes.
Everyone else has become a Trump supplicant or flamed out into like never Trump, like bulwarkitarian space.
Those people are useless.
Yeah, worse than useless. Now they're actively opposed to freedom. Because
right.
Arguing for freedom in Trump's America means
then
surrendering to the dear leader.
Right.
Or people have just completely gotten out of politics at all, like Justin Amash. So.
Yes. Well, right, because he was going to face the exact same thing that all these even Peter Meyer, his successor, who
right.
had who we kind of liked, had
yeah,
some libertarian instincts, seemed like a nice guy, just a little bit of independence, gone.
No.
Gone.
Can't
Look,
do it.
It's Trump's party. There's no way around it. It's you do have to kind of marvel at how amazing it is from a sheer accomplishment standpoint, what Trump has built the Republican Party into. No political leader ever in American history has achieved this level of control of a political party.
I think that's correct. Yeah.
It's amazing. Especially, and he lost an election in there.
Yeah.
We right. don't, usually you're done then.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to move on and he said, no.
Yeah.
They said, you know what? We've got some other great candidates we'd like. We love Ron DeSantis. We like some other people. He said, no.
We're going to have a whole primary and debates about the future of the party.
I'm not attending.
Yep. I'm not there.
Go ahead.
You're gonna vote for me. Yeah. And they said, but you lost the election. And he said, no.
No, I didn't. You lost the election. You're about to lose.
Yeah.
Conservative media said, people watch us. You know, they like us. We're going to foist somebody else on the people. Trump said,
no. It is truly amazing. I mean, you'd have to go back to maybe like Andrew Jackson to find someone who has this level of control over their own political faction.
Right.
I mean, even, you know, let's look at like the most popular presidents of, you know,
Obama and Reagan, not even close to this.
Nope.
Not even close.
By term two, people were getting irritated and
They were popular figures.
Mm-hmm.
They were well-liked. They were the leaders of their parties while they were the candidate and the
mm-hmm.
president. But it is not, you could defy them. It was not expected to be on board with them at every turn.
Mm-hmm.
And the party itself was an organism
yep.
that enacted decisions for its self-preservation and its
mm-hmm.
own good, independent to some degree
yep.
of the candidate and the leader, that is non-existent now.
And if either of those guys had lost
an
election, they would have been done. They would have found someone else.
They won by huger margins than Trump. Ronald Reagan won 49 states in his re-election.
Yeah.
Barack Obama didn't have, neither of them were blowouts by any stretch of the imagination, but they weren't, the first one was the closest thing we've had to a blowout, I guess, in modern times. The
mm-hmm.
second one was close-ish. Trump's were even closer.
Nope. Look
it's
at
amazing.
Hey, look at like LBJ, right? Won the biggest popular vote margin of any president in history in 64. And by 68, he was a total pariah.
Yeah.
You know, we're done with you.
Party wanted him gone. He's
yep.
gone.
Mm-hmm.
This is so it's impressive on a technical level.
Yes.
Not necessarily good for the country.
No.
And I think it's a real shame that you can't have a slightly heretical, I say heretical, but nothing about Massie has changed. And then I'm going to let you talk because I've already said so much about Massie on so many different things, probably a lot of people here are listening to. So I won't belabor this, but Massie has been who he is since 2010,
yep.
voting not to raise the debt, not to increase your taxes, not to do weird regulations, not to send tax dollars overseas. He's been entirely and completely inconsistent on this. It is Trump and the Republican Party's decision to do their giant, disgusting, gross omnibus bills with all these awful things wrapped into one that a principled person like Massie said, I can never vote for this. He would vote for plenty of the things in it that Trump wants. He
mm-hmm.
would vote to fund
mm-hmm.
DHS or whatever else,
mm-hmm.
but he's not going to vote for all the stupid debt exceeding things that go in it. It was a choice to do it like that. And so he didn't vote for it.
Yep.
And then they're going to crucify him for the promise he made to voters that he wouldn't support something like that.
Yep.
It's gross. The level of and then the Israel people, he faced a massive onslaught of spending from Israel supportive billionaires. Mm-hmm. I don't care that they spent their money that way, or millionaires, or however
it's
much
free
money
country.
They have.
Yeah.
They can spend their money. I participated in a debate with Anna Kasparian and PragerU guy Shabos, who, you know, Anna's extreme anti-Israel. It's every third word out of her mouth. This guy's extreme pro-Israel. It's every third word out of their mouth. And I'm like, oh my God. They actually just yell at each other most of the time. Mm-hmm. I'm like, look, I don't even want to talk about that issue anymore. But Massey is not idiosyncratically obsessed with Israel. He votes against foreign spending.
Yep.
For whatever cause. Mm-hmm. And they made it a referendum on his support for Israel by crashing this primary to this degree.
Yep. And
that annoys me. It does.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I'm not in the camp. I'm not worked up about every single thing anti-Israel people get worked up about. They're obsessed to me. But I'm also not defensive of everything having to do with them.
And
I speak for millions.
Yeah, the idea that, like, you can't have a principled, America first policy of, like, we're going to look out for America's interests, right? He was too heretical on this front, apparently, and suffered some extreme slurs towards the end of the, or smears towards the end of the campaign. We talked about it a little last week, but just like increasingly ridiculous.
From this crazy woman making a kind of Me Too accusation that was nothing, that when you looked at it was literally nothing.
And then you had that one congressman, Randy Fine, who is a fanatical
piece of shit.
He's a real slob, as Trump might say, who is said horrible things about Muslims in America.
That they should all die.
Yeah, basically, or that, like, you know, we should kick out the Muslims and protect the dogs instead, right? Was like, oh yeah, someone told me that Massey's a sexual degenerate, so definitely believe me. Yeah, really unfortunate. Okay, so tell me what you think of this.
Hit me.
Here's the, I've seen one suggested silver lining, and I don't know if I buy this, but I'd be interested in your take, which is they had to make this, I think, the most expensive.
$35 million.
Yep, primary ever. Trump had to, you know, waylay into Massey constantly. You had to bring in all these resources to oust this guy, and it was still, you know, it was a 55-45.
Like I don't know, it wasn't that close.
Yeah,
it wasn't a nail biter.
Sure.
I don't see the silver lining. I don't see the silver lining. I think the silver lining is for people who were against libertarians inserting themselves into the Trump movement at all and saying this is how we're going to get our ideas. We're going to mainstream, obviously not all of our ideas, but Trump is mainstreaming some of our good foreign policy ideas or some other stuff. This might be the nail in the coffin to that idea.
Absolutely, because Massey wrote in the pages of Reason an argument for why
libertarians
should get on board with Republicans, and specifically get on board with, like, Trump's Republican
Party. And I was not unfriendly to that argument whatsoever. I was hostile to the anti. I was certainly hostile to the idea that Democrats are some natural or the more appealing fit for libertarians. I think for most of my professional adult libertarian life, or like life as a professional libertarian, I've argued against the libertarian whatever, you know, you hear less about that these days.
Yeah.
That, like, that's a few interesting, solid Democratic people aside who do some things we like, it does happen. I don't see a home for us there. But that doesn't mean the Republican Party is a good home. I saw the argument for why if you're going to try to work with the major parties, the Republican Party is the one you're going to have to work with for us. That argument I bought. I was always more supportive of maintaining or trying to maintain a libertarian party. I mean, it's very hard because our system is just so such a two-party duopoly.
Yeah.
You can make so little traction with a third party.
Yeah.
So anyway, I saw the logic. And Trump, I praised him for saying things that libertarians like on foreign policy, on plenty of other subjects. And I still like what the administration does on tech and AI a lot. It's great. I think it would be in a disaster zone under a Joe Biden second term or a Kamala Harris term.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea about Kamala. No one knows. But a Joe Biden second term would have been bad on this. But so much else has just come to immediate and swift ruin. So,
you know, the pontificators who are Trump, just other conservatives right. who didn't like Massey for his libertarian heterodoxies, dancing on his grave, has of course been incredibly irritating.
That's irritating.
The one thing I will say that gives me a little bit of cold comfort, is there's basically like three types of conservative-ish like mm-hmm. reactions to Trump. One is the like
it's more are there more or fewer conservative types than there are genders.
Ooh. I would have
to think
about that.
James Tallarico.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, there's only one type of conservative to him, fascist.
Yeah.
No, but so there's like
and only one gender for the divine. Woman.
Non-binary.
God
no.
is a woman, ooh. I think.
Right.
Is God a woman or non-binary?
No, he's non Oh, I'm sorry.
From
they,
your
they,
perspective.
They are non-binary.
They're
non-binary.
Yes. They them capital T's.
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead. The three types of conservatives.
And then they said, let there be light.
And then they said, let there be light.
On the seventh day, they rested, for there was no more trans kids to make. Yes, though. No, sorry. So I think you could divide like the kind of conservative right of center, mm-hmm. like orientation to Trump into three buckets, right? There's the like old school Jonah Goldberg types who are like, this guy's bad news all up and down,
yeah.
right?
He wanted, a lot of old died in the wool neocons.
Right. He wanted to pull one troop out of one country and therefore, you know, right. he's a threat to liberal democracy.
Right.
We have
gotta
to
go.
Yeah. And then there's people who, you know, it could be the NatCons. It's folks
right.
like us, libertarians, who like saw in Trump, it's like, okay, this guy might be a vehicle for things that
right.
we want, right?
Yes.
And the all the commentary about Massey is kind of a fight between people in these camps. The NatCons or more traditional conservatives who like some of the stuff Trump does, saying
they like the populist economics.
Yeah, you guys lost. You're not getting what you want from Trump. We're going to get what we want from Trump. The thing is, they're going to get fucking disappointed too because
yeah.
of how we started this conversation. The most people who like Trump because he's Trump.
Yeah.
And Trump likes Trump because he's Trump. He doesn't
yeah.
care about anything else
yeah.
but Trump. And that's what he's going to care about. So he's going to disappoint these people too and ruin these people too.
And the third group,
mm-hmm.
social conservative, boomer, Protestant, older people love Trump more than, they have more affinity for him. I can't imagine feeling this positively about anything.
Mm-hmm.
He could do no wrong. He really could for them.
Yeah.
So, and that's mostly who votes in primaries.
Yep.
So that's why I suspect I didn't want to voice that suspicion to, I said that I thought it was he very well might lose. And my thinking was he's probably going to lose because the kind of people who vote in these primaries, it's not right. If you just Gen Z Republicans or people who voted for Trump for the first time, or there's so many demographics who, if you had them vote, Massey would have absolutely won.
Yeah.
But the people who vote in primaries are older. They get their news disproportionately from Newsmax, Fox, talk radio. They love Trump. This is Trump's demographic.
Yep.
They love him, love him, love him, love him.
Mm-hmm.
So if, when he says, I hate this guy, destroy him, they do
did.
It.
They did.
And it doesn't matter that 2 weeks ago they had a positive opinion about him. They
okay.
don't care.
Let me ask you this. Why was it this primary election that he fell? Because they've been feuding for the last couple ones, right?
It's the one big beautiful bill vote.
Yeah.
And the Epstein stuff. And, you know, to be clear, as I've said numerous times, I actually changed my mind about releasing the Epstein files, and I disagree with Thomas Massie on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish he had not continued working with Ro Khanna and alleged victims of other famous people
mm-hmm.
or powerful pedophiles to keep pressing this issue and asserting, even when there was no evidence of wider wrongdoing, I wish he had not done that. I think he's very sincere and was frankly taken in a little bit by those alleged victims and in the same way he then became ensnared himself by this crazy
yeah.
woman who made this bullshit accusation
right,
against him.
Right.
That's what happens and that's why I've seen yeah. this enough that I'm skeptical of these things. So I wish he hadn't done that, but certainly not enough for me to think he deserved to lose his
right.
seat.
And actually this is more evidence of him being consistent, right? Where the party just moves on and Trump moves on, right? It's like Epstein fanaticism was the like pro-Trump right-wing cause
correct.
Before the election.
Correct.
And he just picked it up and ran with it.
I tweeted this. I'm like, again, I disagree with him, but how could you the audacity for professional Republicans to be mad at him for pursuing this to its end. It's like that meme from The Boys, which I'm going to talk about in a little bit, The Boys, where Soldier Boy is got like, they're there to kill Homelander. And this is from seasons ago. He's like, "You're backing out now, pussy. We're here to do this." It's a great meme. Like, we said we were going to do this and now we're going to do it. That's what they said about the Epstein files. J.D. Vance said this was going to be the highest priority of the administration, and Cash Patel and all the rest. Dan Bongino. Actually, so I tweeted this and Dan Bongino responded to me on Twitter. Let me see if I can find that, because I didn't understand what he was saying in response to me, like, at all. So maybe I'll read it to you and you can. Mm-hmm. Okay, here it is.
No, we'll interpret it together.
Dan Bongino. So I said, "Well, I disagree with Thomas Massey on the Epstein files." Excuse me. "It's important to note that J.D. Vance, Cash Patel, Dan Bongino, and virtually every prominent MAGA voice, actually except for Trump, said releasing the files would be the administration's number one priority. Massey only did what they said they must do." Dan Bongino responds to me, "I'm sorry you missed all of this. Massey never called about it, not once. It's all performative bullshit to attack the administration."
Oh, Dan
You're
Bongino thinks this performative bullshit?
Right into
bullshit?
The op. And then he screenshotted, I think this is a New York Times article, talking about how Dan Bongino had been pushing for a much broader release of the files and was thwarted by Bondi. So he's misreading what I'm saying, because I'm saying I didn't think releasing the files was good. And he's saying, "No, I was really trying to release them like so hard and I got stopped."
Huh.
So I don't.
I'm starting to think this guy's not the brightest bulb.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens.
So anyway.
Yeah.
That's what it's at.
Yeah.
No more Massey. You know, do you want, if we went through COVID again or any kind of national crisis of that thing, would you want to have one fewer Massey in Congress?
No, because he was so crucial here, right? I mean, I think this is actually, like, if, you know, an individual congressman only has so much influence, right? This is probably the most influential thing he did in his political career, which was demand that people come back to Washington
to vote on the CARES Act
and get a recorded vote on $2.3 trillion of COVID spending,
which we all regret
that
spending
was a
now.
Gigantic slush fund that has been pilfered by fraudsters, spiked inflation, ruined this country, this great country of ours. Thomas Massey pissed everyone off by going up there and demanding a vote, pissed Trump off a lot by doing that, and he was right to do it.
He fought the third worldism that they keep complaining about.
Right.
Import the third world, become the third world. You voted for third world style.
Strongman bullshit, here we are.
Here we are.
So, yeah, it's a real, I don't know.
Pour one out.
Boom.
Toast to Massey.
Nick Gillespie had a good essay about in Reason about just like he was the last of the he's like last of the Tea Party, and that's all gone now. And what comes next is
probably gross and ugly and bad.
Yep.
Well, what else? Jeff Bezos made some news yesterday, giving an interview to that guy who's always talking financial stuff. The New York Times CNBC guy.
Yeah, the numbers guy.
You know, the math.
One of these real sharp numbers guys.
Talking math guy. You know who I mean. And he said some things about the taxes that he pays and doesn't pay. And we have to endure another. They're not paying their fair share.
But he kind of, I mean, it was weird in that he both, you know, defended the like, you know, argued correctly that the rich are paying a huge portion
he
of
said,
taxes.
I was confused because he said in his ideal world, the bottom 50%
would pay no taxes,
which is the world we live in. It's close to that.
Well, when it comes to personal federal income taxes, yes.
Yeah.
You know, you have like things like payroll tax or whatever else, which is more regressive.
It's like, I think the top 50% are paying like 97% of all taxes or something like that.
At least of the personal income tax. Yeah. What do you make of this idea that like the tax code should just be ultra progressive and, you know, the bottom
it's already,
something.
I mean, it's already incredible. It shouldn't be more progressive than it is now.
No.
It can't be more progressive than it is now. I mean, I don't want anyone to pay taxes.
Right, exactly.
It's not like I'm trying to raise taxes on the bottom 50%. No, they shouldn't pay anything and no one else should either.
Right. Yeah, I think it was Ron Paul's line where he's like, we should have a flat income tax rate of 0%.
Yes! Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's fund a volunteer military, voluntary taxes.
Yeah.
These people will pay something. These billionaires.
Yeah.
A guilt tax that they pay voluntarily.
Mm-hmm.
You know, indulgences.
Yeah. This was Ayn Rand's ideas. We would have a
She knows what she's talking about.
Have a voluntary tax, yeah. Yeah. Well, it would be awkward then, because then they would feel no guilt because, you know, they're Randian superheroes.
Good.
Yeah.
A little bit of sales tax. Yeah. I like a little bit of sales tax.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if you're going to rank the hierarchy of taxes, sales taxes, sales taxes is towards the top. Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of fewer people paying taxes, but progressive.
Let's play that clip, actually. Let's play it.
People talk about, you know, making the tax system more progressive. How about we start by having the nurses and queens not pay taxes? Why is a nurse in Queens who makes $75,000 a year paying more than $1,000 a month in taxes? That's $1,000 a month that could help with rent or groceries or anything. And so, and by the way, do you know what that all adds up to? The bottom half of income earners in this country pay only 3% of the taxes. So, it's only 3%. We can find 3%. So we don't have, it's a small amount of money for the government, you know that. And really and the more I thought about it, to me, it's kind of absurd that we're doing this. You know, we shouldn't be asking this nurse in Queens to send money to Washington.
Oh, the clip didn't play after my Jeff Bezos impersonation.
Oh, I don't often hear him speak.
Right.
So I was listening to him speak and I'm like, oh, that's what he sounds like.
Yeah.
Just kind of sounds like a normal guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
of all the billionaires, he seems like the most psychologically level headed. Maybe the NVIDIA guy is a little more.
He does seem pretty normal. Yeah, I agree with that. Honestly, Mark Zuckerberg is pretty normal as far as I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's kind of nerdy and a little uncomfortable talking to people. He has like slight social anxiety talking to, but he's under tremendous pressure. Maybe he's normal in real life. I don't know.
He has some eccentricities where it's like, I'm only going to eat meat that I kill myself. And then he became like
surfing.
That's kind of like rich guy stuff, I guess. Yeah. Bezos is just normal in that, he
got divorced, got super buff.
Got a second Latino wife.
Brings her around and is like, get a load of these tits. Like he literally does that all the time. Sam Altman and Elon Musk, I definitely put in the more eccentric category.
Absolutely.
Elon is just crazy
now,
mm-hmm. and he's become increasingly crazy,
mm-hmm.
and it's definitely, probably, allegedly, the ketamine, I think, is what's doing it.
Yeah, you think that'll relax you a little bit. But...
It apparently makes you a lot more concerned about white genocide. And replacement rates of fair-skinned individuals.
Yeah, is getting increasingly worried about demographic questions.
Yes.
Yeah. Obviously the Odyssey thing, and then anytime a white man is killed in the United Kingdom, he is there.
He social media. I don't think social media is bad for people. I think it's bad for one person.
Yes, the person who
happens
to own the platform.
Unfortunately, it's a very important person that it's not good for.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, this dispute with Sam Altman. I don't know if you followed it at all. I read that like long Ronan Farrow story on Sam Altman,
mm-hmm.
who seems like a kind of high functioning scheming type person,
sociopath.
Who's not? I'm a sociopath. Whatever, it's fine. It's not a big deal. It'd be weird if he wasn't. Elon thinks he basically stole OpenAI from mm-hmm. Elon.
Because it was a nonprofit, and then they.
Yeah, and it's too technical to figure out who is right. Mm-hmm. Sam Altman just won the lawsuit basically because the jury just said it's
statute
too late.
Of limitations.
It's too late.
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
AI is going to kill us all. Why are we even here? I'm going to go hug my kids.
That's what the jury said. Yeah. I can't tell who's right. I wish them luck. But
Let me finish sharing some shower thoughts on progressive taxation if I can.
Good.
So on the one hand, it sounds nice. Fewer people paying taxes. That's better. The problem is you end up in a kind of California-like situation where the more steeply progressive your tax code is, the more damaging it is at the particular level for the revenue mm-hmm. you receive, the more damaging it is for economic growth because you're concentrating taxes on a narrower base of people.
Right. You're very reliant on those people.
Right. So just A, that's, you know, that's a more concentrated tax burden on just a certain slice of people and economic activity. And then it's just also, so that's just bad for growth, right? And then you get these, I mean, California is dealing with this all the time, these boom and bust cycles of, you know, oh, the stock market went up a lot, so we have a huge amount of surplus revenue. Let's put that towards permanent programs. Oh no, the stock market's down. We have a huge deficit. What do we do now? Oh, let's make the tax code even more progressive, right? So that's bad.
It's the opposite of what Europe does. People wrongly say that Europe is just so much more progressive. Yeah. We have a more progressive tax code.
Much more so. We tax
Europe.
Less, but we right. have a much more progressive tax code, right?
Right. They tax. They gobble up everybody's income.
Right.
Everyone. They confiscate a huge portion of your income,
mm-hmm.
and then the compensation is all the services they offer,
right?
Which somehow they offer like better, sort of people feel well, so, positively
I mean,
about the services
I think this
they
is,
offer.
This would be the other argument against if you're going to have a welfare state, huge progressive taxation, which is it is just it's much more redistributive, yeah. right? In Europe, yeah, they take you know 80% of your income, but then give you a huge amount of right. services in return. So you're paying for the government services right. that you're consuming. Whereas in America, it's all like I want the services, I want the spending. But tax that guy over there.
Yeah.
Tax the one billionaire who's still smoking cigarettes. Like right. that's who you should tax to pay for the stuff I get. Right?
Also, we're Americans. We're not as reliant on government service. I mean, we're relying on some government services. We're all relying on the Medicare system,
yeah.
the medical system, but we don't like all take public transportation all the time because it's a giant, vast country. You know, you think of, you know, your European mid-sized city where everyone's taking a very nice, you know, the subway is cleaner there. It's, you know, mm-hmm. taking it from tourists are coming and taking it from one place to the other and it's nice and they all like, and there's way more police actually. Mm-hmm. Mm. France has like more police per citizen per capita. Yeah. I forget the exact, way more than we do.
Much more militarized police too.
Yes. Yes.
Gendarmerie is or whatever. And, yeah.
So much for being more progressive.
Gendarmes, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
They have musketeers running around yeah, doing the king's bidding.
Let me tell you, it's more than three of them. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the problem. There's these other arguments for Cody, our producer, and I were talking about this a little before we started taping. But there's all these other arguments for like how you should organize the tax code that are basically based on like here we're giving people different political incentives and mm-hmm. therefore this is how we're going to engineer small government. So if, like for a long time, there's the Grover Norquist idea of starve the beast.
Yes.
Right. Just ruthlessly cut taxes and then eventually the debt becomes unsustainable and you have to cut spending.
Yes.
Well, that didn't work because you can issue a lot. It turns out you can issue a lot of debt.
Yeah. I love that idea though, even though it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
I love it so much though.
And then there's now, in response to Jeff Bezos's comments, there's people been making kind of like the anti-starve the beast argument, which is, now you're never going to cut spending if people don't have to pay for it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what you need to do is actually raise taxes on everyone to pay for the government you have, and then we'll get smaller government. And I don't think that's going to work either. Like, government spends a lot of money because people demand that the government spends money. There's no cheat code here, right? You have to convince people that we would be better off with less government spending and fewer government services. And until you do that, just like playing with the tax dials, in addition to it, that being kind of like paternalistic, right?
Yeah.
Is just like, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. People are going to just like do whatever they need to keep funding the government that they want, right?
It's true. That's all true.
But here we are.
Here we are. It's no good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, something else on my radar this week was, did you see all the violence in my neighborhood? I know that becomes too much of a preoccupation of mine, but this one was real close to home. It was in my Chipotle.
I've seen
you
you're
saw
a
that
Chipotle
video?
Fan, yeah, right?
We'll probably put it up on screen now. Because this would made actually major national news. Like everybody was talking about it on X all week. It's my Chipotle.
Yeah.
And these teen takeovers. I hate to endorse the idea that there's a social media trend. Your kids might be involved, like panic-stricken local news.
Mm-hmm.
Does appear to be what's going on here.
Yeah, wait, so how does that work? They organize on TikTok to go fight at the Chipotle?
Yeah. Hmm. They definitely didn't spontaneously break into a fight. They showed up there with the intention of fighting each
other.
Ready
to fight.
And to be clear, they're mostly fighting each other. They're not trying to fight other people.
Oh, okay, well, that's fine.
Well, they're like hurling benches at each other. Yeah, they're all wearing dark clothes, and some of them are wearing masks and hoods to disguise mm-hmm. what they're doing. So so they showed up there yeah. to do this.
The video is quite shocking.
Yeah, right, because there's like scared customers.
Yeah, huddled in the corner, yeah.
Yeah, they need to be prosecuted.
Yeah.
I'm done with this. It's time for some law and order.
Yeah.
You can't talk me out of this one.
I'm just worried after ransacking a Chipotle, they'll beat the rap.
Oh, pretty good.
Yeah, thank you.
Pretty good.
Thank you.
Yeah. We gotta make an example of somebody so that there's clearly just no certainty of punishment here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Everyone's trying to make it a race thing because they were all black kids. Mm-hmm. And I tweeted about this. I'm like, there's this marauding band of teenagers and it's bad. And so many people are like, teenagers, Robbie? Is it teenagers? Is it teenagers? They want me to say it's black people. But it is teenagers.
Yeah.
It is absolutely teenagers. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's all black teenagers. But actually the relevant issue here is that it's teenagers. And because teenagers, frankly, of every race will cause all sorts of mayhem if unchecked and left to their own devices, particularly boys, although it is a lot of girls in this case, which is weird. Teenagers, we're all this far removed from animals, right? Mm-hmm. Mankind's nature is savage and brutal, and we'll revert to that unless there's some kind of penalty to pay for doing that. No one's paying any penalty, so they're reverting to the state of nature. That's typical behavior of, you know, males reaching puberty and, you know, reaching their warlike phase, right? They gotta go, they'll all go become, in a different time, they'd join the mafia or the cowboys, or they'd be a militia rampaging Europe during the 30 Years' War or whatever. Now they're attacking Chipotle. That is their nature. Not they black people, they teenage boys, or boys from 15 to 20.
That's terrible.
It's bad.
This discussion gets it becomes more, I don't want to say racialized, but DC, there was a graph on Twitter going around a while ago, like comparing the rates of like education for like people over 25 mm-hmm. and like then broken down by race. And it's like in DC, it was something like 95% of whites over the age of 25 have a college degree, mm-hmm. right? DC does not have and has never had a population of like white working class people,
right?
From where you'd get a bunch of rambunctious, teenage ursins, right? But yeah, go out to Arizona and you have the Gilbert goons who are like, you know, filming themselves like killing, you know, a bunch of Mormon kids killing each other on TikTok, right?
Probably not.
No, I'm serious. It's really? Serious. Yeah. Oh, it's terrible crimes. Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Not good. And the one thing they don't, and our people were trying to make, liberals were trying to make, well, there's not enough rec centers open for them. Did you see that nonsense?
Yeah. They just need an air hockey table. Yeah.
Come on. Because you can go to Chipotle and just hang out. Like, that is the third space. Like, you could just go to a restaurant. You can go to a mall. There's still some open. Go down and take that little metro down to Pentagon City and hang out there. I'm sure the stores would love it.
It's terrible.
If you were not smashing things.
Yeah.
Okay. What are you trying to find?
I'm trying to find, well, Slack sucks shit, so.
Well,
I'm trying
try
to find,
Teams.
Yeah, oh boy. No, well, so it's interesting that you brought this up because at the exact same Chipotle, I found it, we're good. Janine Pirro has been all over this Chipotle recently.
You're just trying to order Chipotle while we're
No. I'm not trying to order Chipotle. Okay. That would be easy. The productivity apps that we have make everything hard. But she has been railing against this Chipotle as well. I don't know if you saw her
press
conference.
Oh, yeah, she said we're going to prosecute the parents.
Yeah, well, I guess because she earlier, separate from the teen takeover, was there in the Chipotle and had used the bathroom there.
Oh, she was there.
And I guess it was in a state because she had a whole press conference about this, and I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on this. So yeah, she goes and uses the bathroom there in the Chipotle, and she Saturday before the teen takeover, and she had this to say at the press conference. She said, what happened Saturday night at Chipotle and Navy Yard is unacceptable, is violent, and I'm here to tell you it is going to stop. We are looking beyond the individuals who are committing the crimes.
Just
we
the
are
restroom.
Looking at the parents.
Because of the shade of the bathroom.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess they got to clean it, I guess. But I don't know if prosecuting the parents is going to do anything.
Unto the, and your children and your children's children. And I shall punish you unto the fifth generation for the crime that we saw. in
I mean, hey, I wasn't in the bathroom, so maybe that's justified. Maybe that's justified. But
they just needed a couple, extra gender options.
Oh yeah, then we can separate.
They only have
this
the two, or probably or three. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad she's getting on top of that. Yeah, I don't feel very strongly about prosecuting the parents because
what is their crime exactly?
Well, right. I mean, that does get into a libertarian, like, how at fault are they? Also, that what you're going to send police to find that you're doing prosecutors going to prosecute them. That sounds like a lot of law enforcement power being put toward not the people who did the
right,
thing.
Yeah.
Like, if why not round up the kids? That why not prosecute
right.
the
right?
We're going to do a lot of things. And nobody's going to jail who was throwing things at the Chipotle.
Right? Yeah.
I don't see what that's...
Right.
I mean,
get
if she
get
has
the
some...
people who did the bad thing and punish them.
Yeah. Can anything be straightforward? Can they just do one, like the simple... Like, this is a very simple thing.
That's hard.
It's hard.
You're asking the state to enforce law and order.
I
and
guess.
It's not going to do that. Yeah.
I guess. Yeah. I will not be, at this rate, I will not be long for Navy Yard. This is really getting out of hand.
Yeah,
this is not a one-off. This is like,
they're
out... in the street, just fighting
maybe
all the
this
time.
Maybe this is like a housing affordability program. They're keeping your rents flat by rioting
oh,
in your
neighborhood. Oh, that they are definitely not doing.
Yeah.
No, they tried to jack up my rent astronomically when I re-signed last summer, and I said no. And then they blinked first, and they didn't raise it. So I won that negotiation.
Nice.
So I was like, no, absolutely not. That's outrageous.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm probably going to buy a house next time anyway. I don't know where, somewhere in D.C. But we're having lots of conversations about where that's going to be. I feel I can sense the pull of Arlington.
You don't want to do that. You're a cultured man.
I'm an old man. You know, I'm finally hit the time in my life where I'd like a little bit of yard space. I'd like a grill. I want a grill.
I grill
on my roof right now, but I don't know.
Okay, well,
we'll see.
You know,
we'll see.
It's nice
but
to
it's
ha-
hard to scoot to the office from Arlington.
Right.
So
it's nice to have you as part of the YIMBY coalition while it lasted.
Yeah.
But now you're a homeowner.
Oh, when
so,
I'm a homeowner, that'll be gone.
Look at what they're doing in the neighborhood with these apartments.
They're trying to build a data center. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, Christian. These anti-data center people, I swear I'll never be one of them.
Yeah.
The anti-data center people are going to give me a brain aneurysm with these arguments.
Well, the
are,
data center is going to give you a brain aneurysm from the
all the psychic waves that it's pumping out there. Yeah, I that's legitimately something you heard someone say in a hearing or in a community meeting where people were like, I saw the ghost of my grandfather because of the data center and it's trying to kill me. How do I even?
There's, it's, yeah, you had the good article about
the
almonds and the water.
Right. Nick Gillespie shared a chart showing, which, and you had this stat in your little magazine piece, which was so good. And then we got to talk about your samurai sword piece in a moment.
Yeah, sure.
We're going to talk about the greatest piece of journalism ever written in a moment. So hold on to your butts. So much more water use for almond farms than for data centers. And in response, that complete moron at the Federalist, Sean Davis.
Oh, I did see this.
Real loathsome character. He's like, well, you know, you can eat almonds, but okay. You can't eat data centers, I guess, is the...
Okay.
People think this is a sophisticated argument.
You can't eat
a satellite. You can't eat an oil rig. You can't eat...
Steel.
Electric power plant.
Yeah.
You can't...
I can't even eat almonds. I have a nut allergy.
Like, can we... Are people struggling with a kind of economic reasoning at this such low level that they can't see? Well, some things, if they don't produce... They might not produce... a commodity that you can immediately consume, or they don't. Maybe they don't produce direct tons of jobs. Like Tucker Carlson was yelling at Kevin O'Leary, well, this thing is going to be as big as Manhattan, but it's not creating as many construction jobs or whatever as Manhattan would. Well, A, you wouldn't let us build Manhattan either today
if we had to get permission
from every member of the community.
Yeah.
So we'll just build nothing.
Yeah.
And B, like, okay, but it the data storage is necessary for the modern internet technology jobs that AI, like the new AI companies and the new, like it's the infrastructure for those jobs. The same way, again, a power plant or a a oil refinery or a steel building plant or whatever it is, right? That they are producing something that is a building block for the economy, for businesses that are going to use those things. And just because it's like, it's not a tangible thing, the data, but it is just as vital, which is why we have to build these things.
Yeah. You know, the smart argument, I think, against data centers, and I have some sympathy with this, even though it doesn't change like my policy views on them, is it is definitely a victory of one vision of the internet over another, where the kind of like, you know, old school early internet, you know, like pirate party people or, you know, like torrenters or whatever else, right? Like the vision of the internet was decentralized platforms of just individual users moderating it themselves, sharing files, open source,
downloading gay
software,
porn.
Making gay porn, sharing it amongst themselves. That was kind of a certain, you know, decentralized, I would, maybe libertarian isn't the right word, but maybe like left libertarian vision of how the internet should develop, right?
Anarcho.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And then the data centers represents a triumph of a different vision of the internet, which is the internet is a delivery platform for digital services provided to you by gigantic corporations, right?
That's interesting.
And I understand why people who like the open source vision of the internet don't like this, and I share some of their trepidations, but that's how the market's developed, right? And that's what most people want, right? In the same way, like, you know, we can complain about how modern internet enables you know, corporate and government surveillance of all your data, but the thing is,
it's the revealed preference.
It's people don't care about the privacy; they want the convenience.
They care about it in the abstract, but they will give it away without thinking time and time again.
Yes. No one's
going to read the fine print.
No.
No one will stop to read. You get annoyed when you get a new user agreement from Google or Facebook. Or whatever. Oh, we changed something, so we have to alert you that this is the new user agreement. Yep. Why don't bother with this. I don't want to read this.
Yep.
Well, then you're not going to get privacy.
You could pay $12 a month for a VPN, or you could not do that and give all your data to corporations that give you Google Docs for free.
Yeah.
And that's what people do.
Yeah.
And that's what people want.
Yeah.
And
do you want Google Docs for free? Do you want unlimited space in your Gmail account? Do you want, if you want those things, you're going to need the data centers.
Yeah.
And that's what I don't appreciate. Hmm. People not realizing that trade-off.
Yeah.
They want everything so conveniently and so easily, and don't understand that there needs to be an infrastructure to support that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We need to have it. So somewhere more of these things got to be built.
Right.
And also it's just, they're just railing against, and look, I get it. Nobody wants something noisy built next to them. These things aren't noisy after they're built, but it's noisy while you're building.
Yeah, sure. Construction is disruptive.
Construction is just annoying. Mm-hmm. It's massively disruptive right now in Reason's offices. They've got, you know, all surrounding where we're headquartered. Mm-hmm. There's all this road construction going on that is very annoying.
Yeah, soon. Soon Connecticut Avenue will have a nice data center and we'll all benefit from it. So
people just don't like, people are afraid of, I mean, this is why I wrote that book right behind you, Tech Panic. And I started with the prologue is fear of Facebook, because it's about Facebook. And then it gives way to fear of the future, because it's a manifestation of just the fear we have of change. People, even if they're complaining, don't want something new and different in the technological space. I learned this little anecdote, and then we will get to your samurai story.
I got time.
Good. We might go over today.
Okay.
We'll see.
Indulge me.
My first job while I was in college, two summers in college, I did door-to-door sales for Comcast, door-to-door cable sales. It was really hard. Door-to-door sales is just difficult.
Yeah, I've had to do door knocking.
It's
very
difficult.
It sucks,
Some people are really good at it. Mm-hmm. I don't understand how or why. Some people did a good job with it. But we had a really easy task in some sense, because this was during the digital transition. Do you remember this? Mm-hmm. People were being forced to move to digital cable.
Okay.
Move off analog, like by government order. Mm-hmm. Like it was taking up bandwidth that they didn't want to wait. It was free. Mm-hmm. The conversion to digital was free because it was government mandated. You had to just consent, basically just say, hey, We have a free up. You're going to get more channels. Your picture quality is going to be better. This is just an improvement on the service you have. It's free. They're going to come install it for you. Sounds good. And you know how many people would say no and shut their door in anger. They had to do it. They're going to turn off their kit. But they just don't want to. I remember talking to this woman, and sometimes you talk to these people for a long time, and then you'd hear all about their problems. And this woman was describing how beside herself with grief she was. I use this anecdote in the book because her remote control for her TV wasn't working. And she was just wrecking her life. And I said, well, good news. When you get this free digital upgrade, which will improve your service in every conceivable way, you will get a replacement remote. They will bring you a new remote for free. And she looked at me in horror and shock. And she says, what would I do with a new remote? That's people, man. That's how they approach these things. I eventually realized that the quickest way to sell this thing, which was a free upgrade, was to just not even present it as a choice. So then I just started knocking on the doors and being like, hey, your subscription is being upgraded. This is mandatory. When do you want the installation? Nice. Instead of, would you like this?
Yeah.
When would you, what day is convenient for you? Tuesday?
Yeah.
And that's how you sold that thing.
Yeah. I have a search warrant from Comcast.
It was a fun job, though. We did so little work. Because we were also getting, we were all college students, so they actually paid us a salary and a commission.
Oh, sweet. Yeah.
And I got real lucky one day. This was the second. The first summer I didn't sell all that. I did fine. The second summer I did really well. Not the best in the program. Mostly off just this one golden day I had. Because they would give you turf. They would give you sheets. Printed off on MapQuest. I had physically printed out sheets on MapQuest with stars next to all the houses that were Comcast subscribers. We were not supposed to hit non-Comcast subscribers. We were just going to Comcast subscribers to upgrade their services, to sell them on the transition or buy a phone or whatever. We were not stealing from other companies for whatever reason this was. So I had this, but I had this very wealthy retirement neighborhood where I just struck gold, where like 25 people in a row wanted the deluxe package. And I and then you'd always call in your sales at the end of the day. You called like, because the supervisors were like grizzled door-to-door salesman guy, like the guys who were really good at it. And we were always like, yeah, I sold one thing today. Now today I just went to McDonald's. I didn't do anything. And I called like, Jeff, you're not going to believe this. And I actually spaced it out. I didn't even call. I didn't report all of them for that day. I like spaced it out for the rest of the summer so I could not work.
Breathing room. Yeah, nice.
Fun times.
Yeah,
last real job I ever had.
I had a similar. It wasn't sales, but it was. I was doing like a door knocking for some like political group in Oregon. Similar environment. Bunch of college kids. You had to go do some quick survey, ask for a donation, and then they would just send us around Oregon, and then we'd go back to the hotel and get wasted.
Yep.
Right. Good times. Good
buddy
times.
Of mine from high school and college, Zach, who did he did this internship too one of the summers, and he still lives in the Detroit metro area. He texted me the other day. Goes, it's our Wendy's. He had a picture where we just sit there for hour after hour.
Nice.
Oh man.
Good times.
And you got to become a real adult.
Got to do real work.
Do whatever it is we do. Okay, you have written such an amazing feature story for Reason Magazine. I insist people read it. It's so good.
Do we have show notes? Can we put a link in the show notes?
Yeah, yeah. We'll do something like that. It's about vigilante mercenaries who remove squatters from properties in California because it's so difficult to get people squatting to ever leave. You have to go through an annoying court process. The squatters' rights groups have made it. It's a plague on homeowners, people trying to rent, landlords, people trying to rent their properties, that you can have someone just move in and then get all these rights that you can't get rid of them. So you went undercover with this group of sword wielding vigilantes who you can pay to kind of muscle squatters out of your property.
Yeah. Well, okay. Firstly, thank you. That's a high praise. So I appreciate that. Yeah. So the story. So what I did was back in February, I went out to Oakland, California, and got myself an Airbnb in the hood to follow around this man, James Jacobs, and his company, ASAP Squatter Removal. And as you mentioned, California has this has this serious issue with squatters, where, and a squatter is someone who moves into private property. They're not someone who stopped paying their rent and then it's hard to evict them. It's someone who had no right to ever be in the property, moves in, takes over the unit, and then refuses to leave. And in California, in order to, you know, if you, you know, you're a property owner, someone's moved into the vacant, you know, home you're renovating or a vacant rental unit, whatever, you call, you know, someone moves in, they're not allowed to be there. You call the cops show up and immediately say, this is a civil issue. You have to take it to the courts. This is not our problem. Right. Right.
Let's just pause there. That will strike most people as crazy. Most people won't even know this is a problem. If you own a piece of property and someone who, this isn't even, right, you leased it to them and you're having some dispute over what, this is just someone you never leased it to, has nothing to do with the property, just moved into it, just like crawled in through the, through a floor crawl space or something, took it over and it had no right to be there and is not leaving. And if you call the police on them, they will do nothing.
Yeah, I actually, I one of the anecdotes in the piece is this one landlord in San Jose who he had a squatting situation, and he did what a lot of people do in the situation is you do a cash for keys arrangement. Basically, you pay them to leave, right? And so he pays
a shakedown.
Yeah, it's total extortion. He pays his squatter to leave. She calls her friend to help her move. And so they're moving stuff out. He's supervising. And then all of a sudden he notices, oh, the friend hasn't come out of the apartment. And he goes up there. She'd moved a bunch of her stuff into the apartment and was saying, oh, no, this is my apartment now. And so he calls the cops. The cops show up and say, oh, this is a civil matter. We can't do anything. And he's like, she got here an hour ago, right? In his case, he got very lucky because a more grizzled sergeant show up and say, wait, squatter, what's the address of this place? When's trash day? And she couldn't answer those questions, and so he kicked her out. But the cop's explanation is, you know, I'm confronting someone who says they own the property, and this person is allowed to be here, and the other person is saying, I am allowed to be here. I'm a tenant. I have rights. And they like, I don't want to deal with this. I could make a mistake and get sued. This trespassing isn't a high priority. I'm not going to deal with this.
Sure.
That might sound crazy. It actually isn't. In a lot of states, that basically is the system. The problem is what happens next in California is you then have to sue this person, get an eviction from the court, get a court-ordered eviction, and doing that takes forever. It takes 4 months, 5 months, years sometimes. And, you know, someone might say, well, that's not that big of a deal. It is a big deal when the people who are staying in your property are criminals who are dealing drugs and using drugs
and destroying.
These people
wreck the property.
Squatters,
they will wreck the property.
Squatters are menacing people, right? They are not nice people. Sometimes in the press, they get written up as, they're, you know, poor, down on their luck, and they're just trying to put a roof over their head. Many of these people are hardened criminals who menace the legitimate tenants in your building, right? So because this process takes so long, and squatters can stretch out the process.
Right. If other people are going to move out. Let's say you own a small apartment building and you have other tenants, and then there's someone who's squatting here who is a degenerate criminal who is an open drug den, people coming and going in the middle of the night. They're all gonna leave.
Yes, and I
would leave in a heartbeat.
I have an example of that in my story of it was like a triplex, fourplex building. The squatters move in after having blackmailed the previous resident and forcing them to stay. Otherwise, they were gonna tell the cops he raped them.
Oh my God.
Yeah. The other tenants moved out because the squatters were like flashing guns at them and just menacing. But anyway, so you're a desperate property owner in this situation. The courts won't help you. The cops won't help you. What do? You hire this guy, a shadow, James Jacobs, who carries a katana with him on every job. And his maneuver is basically, the property owner is going to sign me up as a tenant. Hopefully I'll be able to move into the property when the squatter is not there, board it up and just hold it down until they leave. And then I return the property to you, right? You don't have to go through the court system. Sometimes in cases where there's a lot of squatters or it's like a gang house, which is the one property I watched them try to take down.
Yeah, you were in a thorny situation when
it was a little dicey for this zoning hearing reporter. It got a little dicey. You don't have that option of just like waiting for the squatter to leave. And so then you go in and the risk of a physical altercation is high. But this is where being signed up as a legitimate tenant is supposed to protect this guy. And his, because in California, you are allowed to defend yourself in your own home, Castle Doctrine State. And so if there is some sort of physical altercation, and this guy claimed to me that there had been and he'd had to shoot squatters before in self-defense, you can say to the police, I was here legally.
It's my
I was allowed
place.
To be here.
Yeah.
They weren't. I was defending myself, and hopefully that will protect you from criminal charges. He says it's worked in some cases. It did not work in a very recent episode where they were trying to clear a home in San Bruno of squatters, and the squatters threatened to, you know, said, hey, if you come up these stairs, I'm going to shoot you. Then they, you know, I watched the body cam footage. They pulled out their guns, and then they get charged with a long list of felonies for assault with a deadly weapon and whatever else. So their trial is ongoing. That's part of the story. The other part of the story was, yeah, this Oakland apartment building, a very sad case of the owner is a woman who's started suffering from cognitive decline and kind of lost control of the building. Squatters move in and it becomes just a horrible, horrible place in an already kind of sketchy area of Oakland. And so squatters move in, lots of reports from neighboring businesses about criminal activity, you know, drug, weapon sales, pimping, whatever else. This guy gets hired to try to move them out. And I was there for their attempted raid on the building. And what ends up happening? The cops show up, tell the anti-squatter people to leave. And that's that.
Mm.
The gangsters, alleged gangsters, still holding down the building. So as far as I know.
Yeah,
so
reading your story, it's not, you come away going like, okay, this is a dicey way to get people out.
It does not come across
as like, wow, what a great solution to this. But what it really shows you is the desperation that, because landlords are such a demonized group of people, mm-hmm. in media more generally, hugely demonized by progressives and leftists. They're the sympathetic figures here because they are caught between a rock and a hard place. They're having things they own, their livelihood. Right. This is an old woman with dementia.
Mm-hmm.
Her son is trying to take over the building, trying to do right by the other people who live there.
Yeah.
And it's being ruined by people who have no legal right who are evil people, who have no legal right whatsoever, and the court system is going to take months or maybe years to do anything about this.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've turned to these people you met who are colorful characters.
Yeah, indeed.
And
again, the katana, the man's katana, which he uses for every job, featuring.
It didn't really work in the case you supervised. They said they've done it successfully numerous times.
Yeah, and you know, he's had some coverage in local press outlets where, you know, 60 clients effusively praise his work, and you know, so it can be successful. But I think in these more complex situations where you have a lot of, because like their plan for trying to take over the building was, because it's an apartment building, so there's a couple different units, and the plan that he described to me was, we're gonna go in, get what units we can, board those up, and then just try to go like room by room, getting people out where we can. I don't know if that would have worked. But this is just like, again, this is, the state is the monopoly provider of security services, protection. And what do monopoly providers do? They do two things, right? Particularly legally established monopolies. You restrict output because you don't have to do anything. You're the monopoly. And then you crush the competition when people come in and try to offer
The state does not want someone else doing this job.
No.
But their state is not doing a good enough job of this.
Right. No. Yeah, that's the thing.
That's the problem.
This is all downstream of California state just refusing to provide very basic property rights protections.
Yeah.
Because
their progressive governance, their progressive governance,
because
went
they've layered
whole hog on protecting.
Yeah, because the court system is very slow, and they've layered on all these procedural protections for tenants in the eviction process. And squatters, mm-hmm. again, are not tenants.
No.
But it's interesting because in California, theoretically on the books, California treats squatting more severely than other states, but it doesn't matter because it's criminalized there. But it doesn't matter because, you know, you call the cops to report a crime and they say, well, in order to determine if this person is committing a crime or not, you have to go to civil court, right? And so the squatters in civil courts can claim all these procedural protections granted to legal tenants, which they are not, right? Mm. And so that's what perpetuates the system. Whereas in other states, you know, it's a civil matter. You do have to go to court, but it's like a week and you get your property back. And
are there like attorneys who specialize in this or something, in helping people, landlords navigate that? I wonder. But I guess they can't speed up when you get a court date, right? There's nothing they can do about that.
Yeah. And I mean, that's where a lot of the delay comes from, is you file for an eviction and if you're in a big city, it's like, okay, yeah, we'll see you in 2 months.
Yeah.
And then maybe you get it to your hearing, and the squatters say, oh, actually, I'm not prepared. Can we get a continuance? And they're like, okay, yeah, come back in a month, right?
Oh,
it's things like that. Or, you know, another Shrek.
If you don't have all your ducks in a row,
yep.
they'll say, mm-hmm. okay, we'll come back in,
yeah.
1 month, right. 6 months.
Right. And the judge doesn't care, right?
Yeah, the judge doesn't care.
And then, yeah, there's all these, you know, another strategy you use, which you don't have to be that sophisticated of a squatter to avail yourself of these strategies. It's just countersue and make a bunch of habitability complaints. No, I'm a legitimate tenant. I'm not paying rent, but that's because, you know, the air conditioning has been off.
Sure.
You know, there's pests or whatever else. And oftentimes these are problems caused by the squatters themselves. Yeah. But again, it's like the court's like, oh, okay, I guess we need a couple more weeks to sort out these claims. Come back then. All the while they're tearing the copper out of the walls and whatever else. So,
my God.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, it was an interesting reporting experience. A dicey one at times. I don't know. It felt kind of neo-noir because we had to do like surveillance of the property to mm-hmm. like see like, you know, what are the entrances, who's coming and going. So we were just kind of like creeping around this Oakland apartment building in the dead of night. But I'm happy to be back home, but drinking coffee, sitting behind a desk. So.
Well done, sir.
Thank you. I'm glad you liked it.
Well done, sir.
Yeah.
I guess you don't have that when you have large, giant apartment buildings with very professional management, right? Because that's,
yeah,
I mean,
that's
why
that's mm-hmm.
this is one reason to yeah. have apartment buildings where mm-hmm. you have a front desk and wait, who are you? You can't come in here. You don't,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You do that to prevent mm-hmm. these kinds of things.
Yeah. Big corporate businesses can actually be good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Totally. Preventing that exact mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Yeah.
What else did I want to get to today? Oh, The Boys, the television show, The Boys.
Yeah. We talked a little about it last week, but you've had some
additional... It's not good. It's so not
There's
good.
This is a new season, right?
This is the final season. I think the final episode just aired because I've been seeing a lot of commentary on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think... Well, I haven't seen it. I think spoilers: Homelander is defeated or killed or whatever. He's uh-huh. the villain, the mm-hmm. you know Captain America type guy. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get through to it.
Is that bad?
See, it's so unwatchably bad.
You used to like it. So what happened to the
liked,
show?
It's too much of a Trump parody. Mm. He's just supposed to be Trump, which has rendered him less menacing
mm-hmm.
because they're trying to do Trump parody.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, A, it's not very funny. But he was a terrifying character because he has no moral compass
mm-hmm.
and he can just laser everyone to death.
Mm-hmm.
But now, like, he wants a nice ballroom or something type thing.
Oh,
and it's that, it's not literally
great.
That, but it's kind of that.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I can get through it. That's a shame.
That's a shame. Yeah. Trump has ruined so much media because it brings out the worst impulses. I mean, you could just do fan service by having Trump parody, right? And fan service is always a dead end. So,
And impersonations of Trump that are just Trump are so bad
mm-hmm.
because Trump is himself too silly and funny.
I
like the best way people have found to make Trump comedy or to wring comedic value out of Trump is to do Trump if he was... Sauron, Trump if he yeah. was Palpatine, right. Trump if yeah. he was whatever, like though, mm-hmm. like doing the Trump cadence of going through, well, these plans for the Death Star, the greatest plans, like that always makes me laugh every single time,
yeah.
if I'm going to be perfectly honest. It's a good way to get me.
But you got to keep the character the same and apply
yes.
it to a new scenario.
Right. Where,
right?
So where Trump is just a type of, like you could do this for like, you know, Charlie Chaplin as Sauron or so, or whatever. Some mm-hmm. character. Trump's enough of a character in that regard
mm-hmm.
to be a comedic lens.
Right.
But if you're just parodying Trump himself, it's not funny.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, it completely does. Andrew Heaton has said this, right? Where it's like the key to so much parody is exaggeration and there's no exaggerating Trump.
No exaggerating.
Yeah. It's tough because the comedians, they were raised on George W. Bush, who was imminently...
Right, the straight man.
Yeah. Right, exactly, exactly.
What happened to all the straight men?
You tell me.
Yeah, the Dana Carvey impression of George H.W. Bush mm. is so funny because George H.W. Bush is a completely boring person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is why the Office went really downhill in the later seasons.
Yeah.
Is because you had a good setup of kind of not straight man, but straight environment
mm-hmm.
in which you inject this ridiculous character. Right.
But then they themselves all have to become
ridiculous, wacky characters.
And have eccentric
right?
people brought in.
And so then there's no right. base for that eccentricity to bounce off of.
Yeah. I hate Andy so much
yeah.
as a character.
Yeah,
I
sure.
hate that character.
Yeah.
The actor I like in other things.
Ed Helms, yeah.
But I hate that character. I don't know why it is established. Actually, I like his, he kind of, he kind of becomes unlikable and disappears from the role because he takes over the office after Michael Scott departs.
I like him. I like him in the first season that he appears, which is the third season. Where he's
I actually watched it more regularly as it went on, so I probably missed like the really good period of The Office.
The way I divide The Office is the first three seasons are excellent, and then they kind of resolve on underlying each of those three seasons is kind of like two primary arcs, right? One is Michael Scott being both very obnoxious, but also kind of like in a childlike need for
golden retriever
approval, from the rest of the staff, right? Who just like work at a, you know, just want to go to work and go home, right? And that's eventually resolved with people kind of like starting to like Michael, right? And then the other big tension is obviously like the Pam and Jim, will they, won't they? But then they do get together.
Right.
And then it's like, okay, well then both these things are
and
done.
And then she becomes this nagging, spiteful, envious of his success, holding back this great man.
Yeah, what's the opposite of a Lady Macbeth?
Yeah. Oh, just rooting for him to fail at all times.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Can't stand her.
Well, we don't have to dwell on that, but
the other good I liked Parks and Recreation more, but then Parks and Recreation became way too sentimental and frankly offensive to my ideals because it was like Ron Swanson, a libertarian character, but then they had to defeat his ideology. They had to make that an object of ridicule, and it's okay to ridicule it a little bit. It's funny. I can laugh
at myself.
Your
joke's fine. I'm not offended by your jokes.
But then it had to be but Leslie's always right. Is always right that whatever the local government wants to do, the idiotic townspeople are wrong, and big government is good. It became like a Clintonian, Obamian project of liberalism.
When did it come out? Was like at the very beginning of the Obama years, and then I think just into the culture they had to
it's a girl boss type thing. We need this government would be just fine if we had a girl boss in charge of it.
Yeah, this was in a lot of TV and movies at the time, is like a worship of like smart liberal technocracy.
Yes. Well, that's why my favorite of all these shows is 30 Rock, which that one is a laugh a minute. It is an underrated show.
Funny.
It also has offensive comedy.
Yeah.
Like it's amazing they got away with it because it and also a lot of like absurdism, a lot of just totally off the wall. Like the Will Forte is Jenna's boyfriend later, who's like doing drag performances of Jenna, and they have the weirdest sexual and it's hilarious.
Yeah.
It is so funny, and I don't know how they thought of these things. But that one often takes the girl boss female character down a peg very consistently. What's his face is often right. Alec
Jack
Baldwin.
Donaghy. Yeah,
Alec Baldwin, who everyone hates in real life, but is just amazing at this role.
Yeah, he gets his knocks too, but he's also presented as kind of like the voice of wisdom right?
Yeah. That's a great, I love that show.
Yeah.
I still watch clips of that one more than any of the others. If I just want to start smiling. The doctor character who's not even
Dr. Spichemin.
Who's not even important to the show, and everything he says is so funny and is
so good. Yeah, it's just one of those shows where it's just like the inventiveness is on the next level.
Yes.
It's both incredibly inventive and strange while also still conforming to a basic sitcom format, which is a hard thing to do and a really impressive thing when you can pull it off.
Kenneth is often, there's like three times in the show where he just for no reason says, like looks and goes, I need more time, Jacob, give me more time. That is a reference, it's like an obscure reference to Lost, like Jacob is the like protector of the island, but they don't like demand that you get that. They're like, just pay attention, just keep up with us. Of course, Kenneth, the ultimate like TV obsessed figure would view the fictional deity from Lost as his actual god without any explanation of that's what he's doing.
Right. Yeah, I mean it's self-confident enough that like we don't have to explain every joke to you, right? Like you're going to get it or you're not.
Yes.
Yeah. And the jokes are so dense that it doesn't matter if you miss one or two.
Yes.
The Simpsons was like this too, right?
Yeah.
Every Simpsons episode is basically just like a long series of references to other media. And sometimes you'll get the jokes and sometimes you won't, but it's all generally very funny. So at least the first couple of seasons.
I've liked Simpsons enough when I've watched it, but almost now it feels too tame or safe to me compared to even compared to like Family Guy, which I'm not saying that's cutting edge avant-garde humor by any stretch of the imagination, but is a little weirder than The Simpsons.
Yeah, The Simpsons is more coherent and a little more artistic, mm-hmm. I guess. At least I when I refer to The Simpsons, I mean the actual show of mm-hmm. seasons 1 through 8.5, not the bastardized show that is called The Simpsons that is still on the
air. Now it's just a venue for celebrity cameos, yep. basically, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, no, I don't watch that, but...
I watched Futurama pretty regularly.
Oh, that was good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I did like a lot of Futurama. I think it was... It had its hits and misses. I did like it when it was really cooking. They had those, like, series of almost movies, which were basically just, mm-hmm. like, 4 episodes that I thought were pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, involving time travel and things of that. You know how much I love time travel plot lines.
Uh-oh.
God, I love a good time travel plot line. But they had some good stuff there.
Yeah, the Futurama was interesting because it was, like, made by the same person who made The Simpsons, Matt Groening, yeah. right? I found it more interesting as a science fiction show yeah. than a comedy show, yeah. really. Rick and Morty, actually, I have a similar reaction to.
Rick and Morty's great.
Rick and Morty is way better than these. It's funnier than, I like yeah. The Simpsons more than Rick and Morty, but Rick and Morty, it's funnier than Futurama, but also the thing I like about it most is just like the weird
how dark it is.
Yeah, yeah, well, the nihilism depresses me after an episode or two,
yeah.
right? But it's just like it's good science fiction.
Yeah.
And so that's what I really like about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'm a huge Rick and Morty fan, It's remained remarkably consistent over it's like in its 8th or 9th yeah. season or something like that.
Oh, we're talking about the problems of the centralization of the internet. Mm-hmm. Futurama is actually a great example. It used to be there was a whole community of people who would fall asleep to watching Futurama, and then Netflix took it away. And now those people are crazy insomniacs. Yeah. yeah we voted yeah. for Trump, probably.
Probably.
Now here we are.
Here we are. The other thing I'm watching right now is Euphoria. It's a new season of Euphoria. It came out a couple weeks ago. I finally started trying to catch up with it. I'm like 3 episodes in. This is the Sydney Sweeney, Zendaya, yeah. mm-hmm. Jacob Elordi, all the hot people.
Yeah.
Who, for the first 2 seasons, it was just like, they're supposed to be high school students and not a single one of them look even remotely passably like yeah. they're in high school. But now it takes place like 5 years later. And so now actually they're playing people they could reasonably be playing. And the creators must be a real sick fuck. And also he must just, not that there's anything wrong with this, like love attractive women and putting them in situations where you see them without any clothes on doing sexy things.
See, it's a difficult literary challenge.
Because, man, they put Sydney Sweeney in some situations that are going to be strongly appreciated by half the population, oh. is all I'll say about that. But
the HBO app is trying to force me to watch Euphoria, and I don't have any interest in it. I don't like shows with pretty people. You know,
they're
like,
really pretty.
I like Guar.
I mean, it's
ugly things.
Gritty.
I like watching the Lord of the Rings movies where just the orc scenes though.
Yeah,
all I
want to
see
scene.
Are the orcs. Yeah.
I mean, there is some darkness. Zendaya plays a drug addict, and there are some interesting sequences that is cinematic in the second season. Like there's one episode where there's a lot of continuous shots where she's basically just, she's in the midst of an addiction episode and she desperately needs more drug of some kind. Mm. And she's like running from her parents and then she's running from the police and she's like breaking into people's homes. And it's this long sequence of just utter destruction where you frankly come to despise the character. You're sympathizing with her to a point, but she's really destroying the lives of the people around her in a really dramatic way. I think they maybe make it look cool and sexy a little bit too much in the first season, but by the end of the second season, I think you're very well disabused of that notion. In this season, she's just working as a drug mule. Mm. She owes this drug dealer way too much money, so... I loved how it started. Like the drug dealer shows up. She's like, hey, I haven't seen you in 4 years. You owe me tons of money. You owe me like $20 million. You don't have that. And that's how I became a drug mule. where she's like literally swallowing the balls of heroin and then crossing. And it's gross.
Yeah.
Gross stuff.
Okay. That sounds interesting.
But Jacob Elordi, you know who that is?
No.
The tall, handsome guy and everything.
Mm-mm.
He played like the quarterback in the first 2 seasons, and he was a real sociopath, like extremely villainous, kind of chilling portrayal. I liked the character because he almost has like a school shooter vibe, but he's so handsome and rich, and he's like the most popular. Like, what if the most popular person was just deeply evil? But now he's just a normal person, kind of. And I'm waiting for him to snap and kill Sydney Sweeney. So don't give me spoilers if that's what happens. But they're like getting married, and I'm like, isn't he going to kill her? Like, I think that would be consistent with the character. So I'm waiting for that. But I'm enjoying it.
All right. Well, let me know how it wraps up. Maybe I'll
give it a try.
I'll put aside my bias against pretty people. And
that's what I'm watching. I don't know if I'm going to finish the book. I'm going to finish it. I hate quitting things. I never quit things. I quit Stranger Things. I could not finish that one for the life of me. I just lost all interest in the characters just explaining to me what they're doing at every time. Mm-hmm. Stop talking to me. Just do just show your arc and your development by your actions. Yeah. Please stop narrating it to me.
Yeah. I'm happy to quit shows.
You're happy.
I quit on a dime. I feel like this is the one control I have over Hollywood, right? Yeah. Is I will refuse.
You'll say no.
If you don't control my attention. It's like, you ever watched The True Detective?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched the first two seasons and I stopped.
Okay. First season, excellent.
Excellent.
I actually didn't watch 2 and 3, which I hear mixed reviews about both.
I like 2 more than a lot of people did.
Okay. Say 3 was okay, but then the fourth one was just like a mess. It was not good. And it's a mystery show. And I got to the penultimate episode and I'm like, I'm done. You know, you'd think, I gotta finish it. I gotta see it through to the end.
Now that I find crazy.
I gotta see
the
mystery.
Oh, right, didn't you not watch the last 2 episodes of Game of Thrones or something?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I appreciate taking a stand against a show that took a dramatic downhill.
I'm the Stannis of show watching, you know? I will break before I bend.
Well, they did that character dirty, that's for sure. What are your vacation plans?
Oh, yeah, let's see here. So
we're coming up against a... Yeah. Long 3-day weekend.
Yes. So we're recording this on Thursday because Friday I'm going on a road trip down to Tennessee with some friends.
I'll be gone too, but I was still planning on showing up and doing my job until you told me we needed to do this a day earlier because, you know.
Well, you know, now I gave you a day back in your life.
All right.
Already misspent. But so, yes, we're doing that. Should be good. The drive is 5 hours and 58 minutes, and my stoner rock playlist is 6 hours and 2 minutes long. So we're going to be fine. and then I'm going with my family to Mexico at the end of June. So
nice.
Yeah. How about you? What do you got going on?
I'm taking some twinks into the woods in West Virginia. Who knows what's going to happen? Right. No, it's supposed to rain all weekend. So I will be bringing a large number of complicated board games.
Okay, what's on the docket?
Well, we're definitely gonna have some Secret Hitler. Mm-hmm. That's not a complicated board game, but that's a lot of fun. You know, that's one of those mafia style games where you got to figure out who the bad guys are. We play that in the office all the time. Great game. I highly recommend for groups of like 5 to 8. If it's easy to explain, it's fun to play, anyone can play it.
It's great for a
it's not like now we're gonna spend 3 hours learning the rules type of game, which you never want to spring on people if they're unwilling. If people are coming to your house specifically for a complicated board game, or you have a bunch of twinks being held hostage pleading for their lives in a cabin in the woods, then you can get them to play complicated board games. So also on the docket will be Agricola, which is my favorite. It's a farming themed game. The tagline is farming in the 17th century, not an easy proposition. It's so much fun. It's like a resource management game is how I would describe it. Yeah. Like there's wood and there's clay and there's stone and there's reed, and the stockpile replenishes every round of the game. But one of the things you can do is, because we go in order, one of the things you can do is I'll take first player. So next time, I get to pick the resources first. So should I take wood now, or do I want to wait till next time? Because next time there will be twice as much wood, and I'm going first. Oh, but wait, with my first move, I actually want to do this, but is the other guy going to do that? It's like trying to plan out your future actions based on what other people are going to do, not knowing what they're going to do, and you kind of look at their farms like, okay, I think you're going to plow and sow. I think you're going to raise sheep. I think it's great. So much
okay,
fun.
Okay, little farming game.
Little farming
so,
game.
So these twinks aren't the only thing you're going to plow through this weekend.
Oh, God. No. And Wormspan,
okay,
which is a dragon-themed variant of the popular Wingspan game. bird themed. This is the dragon themed one. It uses a very interesting gaming mechanics that the inventor of Wingspan came up with. That I won't bore you. It's a great one if you want to have a headache. It's similar, like planning out all your future moves.
Yeah.
And you do at the end, you go, did I have fun or did I just like do algebra?
If you want, I they're in the office here. They're mine, but you're welcome to borrow them for the weekend. I have a Euphoria. Oh, yeah.
That's the name of the show.
It's the name of the board game.
Oh.
And then also Terraforming Mars.
That's a popular one. I've heard of that one.
It's pretty fun.
Is that a co-op or a collaborative game?
No, it's competitive. But it is definitely one of those like, okay, there's multiple routes to victory, and I just have to like maximize my points through one strategy of placing things on the board. So you're gonna want to watch a YouTube video explaining how to play it, but it's a good time.
My brother and I tried to play. I was at his house for an extended visit, and it was just us, and he's very serious about board games too. We played a lot of Wingspan, as it turned out, but my sister-in-law, she bought us this game, I think it was called Scythe, to a very complicated, well-reviewed game that we were gonna play, just me and my brother, and we sat with that rule book for a good long time, and we're reasonably smart people, especially when it comes to games. And we decided at the end that this is just not a game you can pick up and learn to play. You have to play it with someone who already knows how to play it.
Mm-hmm.
We could not. We're like, you know what? Let's just play Wingspan again.
Yeah.
So we put that one away and we haven't played it, but it sounded good.
I had a similar experience with back in high school. We went to Beach House, and it was my friend's parents' beach house, and they had a copy of like an old board game called, I think it was called Warlords, and it was about it was China during the like 1911 revolution, right? And so you play like a different warlord. But the rules were so poorly written. There was never really like a description of like state of play, right? Or like order of play. It was just like, this is what this piece does. Here's this factor. Here's this factor. And it's like, okay, but like, what do I do? Right? And so we went to this house a couple times, and each time we're like, we're going to do it. And like an hour and trying to figure it out, we just decided to get drunk instead.
That actually comes up in Agricola a lot, because people playing for the first time always go, okay, how do I take wood? And in the instruction manual, it says, to do an action, simply do that action. Like, how do I take wood? You just take wood. You do the take wood action. How do I grow my family? Take the grow my family action.
Wow, okay.
That's as
pretty simple.
Easy as it is. I was going to say one more thing about some kind of game, but...
You know what I'm going to be playing a lot this summer? They've spruced up Meridian Hell Park here in D.C. The fountains are on. So we're going to be playing a lot of chess in the park.
Chess in the park! Mm-hmm. That's right. You're pretty good.
Although no, I'm not very good, but I have aspirations.
When you were rushed, I beat you. But
you did.
Those
pieces, they didn't make any sense.
We had cobbled together a chess board from like... Like an old shoe was on the board as the horse. Yeah. I like chess a lot. My brother's definitely better than me at that game. But I'm not very good. I know like the couple little things.
Forks and revealed attacks or whatever.
Oh, no, that's way over my head. No, I can do the thing where this one always gets people at first at like low level of play, where you position the horse.
Knight,
to,
yeah.
The knight, yeah. The horsey to check.
Oh yeah,
the king in check, and then you have the person has to move the king, and you kill
get the rook.
Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure.
That one, they fall for every time the first five times, and then never again. Yeah.
Very good, very good.
All right, well, you have a lovely vacation, sir.
You too.
And if we survive our various ordeals, we will be back next week for more Free Dope.
Thanks for watching.